You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. If you missed your favorite program, don't worry. You can listen to podcasts of our program at cjsf.ca.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded November 20th, 2024. Well, Benjamin Netanyahu and his generals promised they would make a Gaza of Beirut, and they've been as good as their word. Israel has killed thousands and made more than a million people homeless in Lebanon, most of those through bombing attacks against high-rise apartment blocks. And as with its obliteration of Gaza, Israel's justification for the civilian carnage is a hunt for members of Hezbollah hiding, it says, beneath the flats and hospitals and other vital infrastructure using the population as a human shield. Laith Maarouf is a Beirut-based multimedia consultant, producer, and now frontline war reporter. He's the founder and executive director of FreePalestine.video, whose purpose, it says, is to provide coverage of the region, quote, in the absence of media supporting the resistance forces in the English language due to the ban in the West. That's never been more important than right now, as the Holocaust begun by Israel and its Western backers against Palestine spreads to Lebanon and across the region. Laith Maarouf in the first half. And last month, archive.org was hit with a DDoS, or denial of service hack attack. Among other things, the archive is the home of the Wayback Machine, a tool used by researchers, writers, reporters, editors, and all manners of people wanting to know when, who, and what was said, written, and performed on the internet. The entire internet. It is, in short, the nearest thing we have to the Library of Alexandria, a place where the sum of knowledge available on the new medium can be found. So who would want to burn that library down, and why? Debbie Lerman is a retired medical writer and fellow at the Brownstone Institute, spending her time these days doing research and writing articles for it. Debbie's focus is the societal and global trends instigating and contributing to the COVID catastrophe. Trends, she says, are accelerating even yet. Her recent article, co-authored with the Brownstone founder Jeffrey A. Tucker, is "They Are Scrubbing the Internet Right Now." Debbie Lerman and the war being waged for the internet's past and our collective future in the second half. But first, Laith Maarouf from Beirut. Welcome back to the show, Laith.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Well, it's always my pleasure. Of course, now, Laith, we're getting some coverage of Israel's blitzkrieg over Beirut, but the language at the CBC remains sickeningly passive. What, Laith, should Canadians know about what's happening right now that they're not getting from their national broadcaster?
Yes, so the Zionists were trying to terrorize the population of Beirut and the government of Lebanon into submitting to a surrender deal before the American negotiator Hochstein, who happens to be also a former Israeli officer, was going to come to Beirut. So today, Hochstein was here in Lebanon, but the day before, the Israelis attacked three locations within 24 hours within the municipality of Beirut proper. One of those attacks was 500 meters away from the parliament of Lebanon, and was targeted attack on the home and offices of the mayor of the neighborhood, so an elected official. And the other attacks were on the edges of Beirut from the other side. So they were trying to kind of like draw a belt around the city of fire. And what ended up happening is that Hezbollah responded in kind, attacking Tel Aviv, but still not attacking civilian infrastructure or buildings. In fact, they attacked one of the offices of the Mossad in the heart of Tel Aviv. And the negotiator of the U.S. arrived today, as I said. He met with the Speaker of the House, Nabih Berri, head of the Amal party, and the prime minister, caretaker prime minister. And both of them rejected any surrender conditions and insisted that the only thing that is a reference is the United Nations Resolution 17 1701, which guarantees that the Zionists cease to violate Lebanese sovereignty. And just an hour after Hochstein left, a new Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Naeem Qasem, spoke to the nation in a recorded statement and said that they will not be accepting any conditions that violate the sovereignty of Lebanon, and that they are ready for a prolonged war of attrition, and that they will not negotiate away the sovereignty of Lebanon, no matter what.
Well, and now the Speaker of the Parliament, CBC, says that he has the imprimatur of Hezbollah to, so he is speaking for both the Parliament and Hezbollah when he talks to the American, his American interlocutor, the Israeli soldier, former soldier that you described?
Yes, so Hezbollah has given him the authority to negotiate on their behalf, but they definitely trust Nabih Birri because the Amal party is the other Shia in Lebanon and is engaged actually on the ground in the south of Lebanon in defending the country. It's this partnership between Hezbollah and Amal that keeps the country safe.
Israel has continued its pattern of targeting high officials. They killed Hezbollah's Mohammed Afif. He's the media liaison for the organization. Do you think this is because they feel, the Israelis do, that this is a way to keep any messaging out of the Western press?
Yes. So one of those three attacks that I mentioned a day ago inside Beirut proper was on the headquarters of the Ba'ath party, the Lebanese branch of the Ba'ath party. And Mr. Mohammed Afif, the media relations director of Hezbollah, was assassinated in that attack. He has been very, very active, especially since the assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the former secretary general of Hezbollah, in taking media and public space. And he has been organizing almost daily tours for the international media to show them the terrorist actions of the Zionist colony, the results of them on the grounds here in Lebanon. And that was definitely irking the Zionists. He did say in one of his last press conference, I'm talking about Afif, that, you know, he knows that his media presence and all his public work is increasing the possibility that he will be assassinated and martyred. And clearly that's what happened. The Zionists can't stand anybody that doesn't fear them, that publicly takes positions against them. And the firebrand position of Mohammed Afif and his amazing work in bringing all the international media to the reality on the ground in Lebanon cost him his life, and he gladly gave it to the freedom of his nation.
Well, I describe in the introduction Israel's bombing of Lebanon as a blitzkrieg. The blitzkrieg was the Nazi Germany the tactic meant in the Second War to terrify the citizenry, thinking that the citizens would put pressure on the leadership and the military to surrender. It was proven to be an ineffective tactic back then, and it has been every time it's been repeated. What about the situation, the morale in Beirut right now? What result is the Israeli blitzkrieg having on Lebanese resolve?
I think it only actually strengthened the resolve of the Lebanese people. Any schism that may have existed before, any criticism for Hezbollah and its actions that existed are practically all dissipated and gone. And this is because the Zionists have went overboard. I mean, they want to create a civil war in Lebanon by, getting the Maronite sect, for instance, to, you know, do what it did in the 1980s and 70s. But their persisting of attacking churches in Lebanon, there's up to 12 now churches destroyed across Lebanon. This definitely turned the Christian population against the Zionists. Similarly, their insistence on attacking Sunni areas of Lebanon and attacking the Palestinian refugee camps and the Islamic group, which is a Sunni party here in Lebanon that's Lebanese, that all again turned the Sunni population against the Zionists. In fact, the actions of Hezbollah in coming to the defense of the Shia, of the Sunni population of Gaza and the Christian population of Palestine, while the majority of Sunni states in the world just abandoning the population of Gaza and the majority of the Christian states in the world abandoning the Christians of Palestine, has made Hezbollah a hero in the eye of those communities, and is, you know, any sectarian feelings that the West invested in for decades to create a schism between the Shia, Sunnis, and the Christians of the Levant area with their Muslim brothers and sisters is now gone. Billions of dollars invested into that scheme of internal strife that the West has built its plan on for decades is gone.
To be fair, though, to the outside world, Pope Francis has piped up about the continued attacks, not only against Christian churches in the West Bank and Palestine and Lebanon now too, but the attacks generally by Israel against civilians. They're calling for it to stop. I think it's the second statement that Vatican's has made.
Yes, and this actually made it even more impossible for the Falange party led by Jaja, the Christian Supremacist Party, to be able to mobilize anybody within the Maronite sect specifically, because the Maronite Church accepted the Pope as the representative of God just a decade and a half ago. So even if there is preachers, priests within the Maronite Church here in Lebanon that want to align themselves with the Falange party, they're not able to speak publicly. Nobody can use now the Maronite Church as a place to mobilize hate and arm people for a civil war. So the West has lost this, and we have to give credit to the Pope, although, you know, many people would think that he should go further in his statements. Just these, light statements about what's happening have diffused the possibility of using the Maronite Church to instigate a civil war in Lebanon.
I'm wondering, we've talked many times over the last year about tactics and what Hezbollah might do next and so forth. Why has the some of the main infrastructure that might have been obvious to attack, say, in Haifa, the power infrastructure there, or the offshore infrastructure of the gas fields, why do you think, Laith, those haven't been targeted as yet?
Well, because, you know, up until now, the Israelis also didn't dare attack the infrastructure of Lebanon. They have been attacking homes, buildings, assassinating individuals, but they have yet to touch. And this is remarkable, because remember, in 2006, within the first week of the war, the 33-day war, the Israelis destroyed all the electric grid of Lebanon, including the two main electricity factories in the country, and attacked the refinery and caused the largest oil spill in the Mediterranean's history. The Israelis have not dared do that here in Lebanon today. And that is a testament, actually, of the deterrence power of Hezbollah. So Hezbollah doesn't want to risk do that yet. In the meantime, Hezbollah's concentration on 24 hours of waves of missiles and drones on the Haifa region have led to the exodus of 75% of all of the population of the colonists from the city. Who's left inside the city right now are the Palestinian citizens of the Zionist colony. That's the only ones that are that are not afraid and are staying inside Haifa. So this is the second largest city in the colony that is practically now empty of colonists. This is similar situation in all of the north of Palestine, between Haifa and the Tabaria Lake, or the Sea of Galilee, as it's called in English. All the colonies have been emptied, and the Palestinian cities and towns and villages in the north, Palestinian citizens of the State of Israel, are still full of their populations. They're not being targeted also. So we see right now a liberation of the north of Palestine without an invading force coming in. And what's left on the ground are the Palestinians and the Zionist military that's on the front lines and in the bases.
Well, Laith, when you say that the Israelis aren't attacking the infrastructure, I'm seeing reports of a growing number of healthcare workers being killed, paramedics especially. Are they not attacking the Israelis' clinics, hospitals, ambulances, and these sorts of things? And would you not consider those to be infrastructure?
Yes, they have been specifically targeting the military medical infrastructure in Lebanon, the Zionists. And, you know, I think it's almost 400 right now medics and doctors and nurses that have been killed in Lebanon since the beginning of this attempted invasion 50 days ago. So the rate is very high in terms of martyrs in the medical system of Lebanon. There's been at least three major medical centers for paramedics and firefighters and so on that have been hit in the south of Lebanon. There was a hospital hit in Baalbek region, and multiple hospitals in Beirut that got partially damaged. So the Zionists are one of their main targets of this war is destroying the medical systems in Palestine and in Lebanon, as well as the journalists and the media system in these countries. And this is a genocidal intent because they want every injured Palestinian or Lebanese person to be martyred, not be able to have their life saved. And with the journalists and the media, it's because of the failures of the Zionist propaganda to dominate the story because of the amazing work of the Palestinian and Lebanese people, citizen journalists, and the resistance media. But Hezbollah hasn't yet targeted any medical facilities in the Zionist colony, nor did they target any journalists specifically. There was a synagogue in Haifa that got destroyed a few days ago, but it's not clear if that synagogue was targeted deliberately by Hezbollah.
And we'll talk about your colleagues and the dangers that you face both on the ground and online in a second. But I want to also remind that the pager attack that preceded the Israeli bombing campaign was also aimed at primarily medical staff and first responders, who are the people that most prevalently carry these pagers devices that you see on doctors' hips in hospitals here as well.
Yes, and so that attack was one of the most heinous that we've seen since World War II in any battlefield. This was a huge violation of the prohibition of booby-trapping civilian objects. And now the door is open, obviously, for anyone to do such a thing in any battle zone. The former director of the CIA it was said that this is the scariest thing that he's ever seen in any intelligence operations. It changed the world. Look, everything that's happening in the battlefield in Palestine here and Lebanon is changing the world as we know it permanently. And what we're fighting about right now is who's going to write the rules and laws of the next emerging multipolar world. The West and the Zionist colony want to write in the rules of the jungle as the code, and humanity is looking for something better than that.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Laith Maarouf. Laith is a Beirut-based multimedia consultant, producer, and he's a frontline war reporter these days. He's a founder and executive director of FreePalestine.video. Laith, before moving on to some of the other areas, what else should we talk about? I don't want to leave Beirut in the shade of all the other things going on, or Lebanon more generally. Is there something else that we should know about before moving past or beyond what's going on there?
The battle is obviously heating up, and the statement of Sayyid Naeem Qassem in his speech today said that any attack on Beirut, there will be an immediate retaliation on Tel Aviv, and this is the new formula that we're living.
When you talk, Laith, about this being a precedent-setting time, and that anything that happens now is that it's going to be the future template and so forth, well, it's not only one-sided. In Yemen, I saw a video of an attack against the American Abraham Lincoln carrier group. First of all, do you know the video I'm talking about with these the rocket attack against the ships?
Yes.
Is that legitimate footage?
I am not sure, but it's definitely the attack itself happening is a fact. And the Abraham Lincoln and its destroyers that are protecting it got hit. This is why the Abraham Lincoln now is limping back to its port in the U.S. To be fixed. And another aircraft carrier is going to come with this attack group, and they're going to get clobbered. Up until now, Yemen has been only using drones and cruise missiles to hit the aircraft carrier and its defense group. They haven't yet used hypersonic missiles, and if one of those hypersonic missiles hits a aircraft carrier with its nuclear reactor, you could understand the outcome, what it would be. It would be, the whole fighter group that is with it will be deleted off the face of Earth. According to American generals and officers in the Navy, this is the worst situation that the American Navy has been since World War II, that they have never seen such warfare. In fact, nobody dared fire on an American ship since World War II, basically. Even that story about, the American ships being sunk in Vietnam was not true. So not one American aircraft carrier has come under fire like this since World War II. So this is a new world that we live in. The United States has, and the West as a whole, have lost the most important cornerstone of world domination for the last 600 years, which is naval power and the ability to project power onto nations. Now we're beginning to see the retreat of empire, the Western empire, to its shores. If the U.S. cannot and the West cannot project power through this naval force, then they are stuck by projecting power through land bases, and their land bases in Western Asia, in Africa, are either coming under attack or being asked to leave, as happened in the Sahel region. So if this trend continues in this direction, we will see for the first time the Western powers returning to their natural borders in terms of their ability to project power.
Yeah, it's a maritime empire for sure, and the USS Cole being the only other American ship that, of course, was attacked in Yemen in 2000 or 2001, if memory serves, as well as journalists being attacked on the ground, unprecedented numbers being killed in Palestine and now in Lebanon as well. Online, it's a fraught atmosphere. Your channel was briefly shut down on YouTube, and they've let you back up again, kind souls that they are, but they gave you a strike for running an interview with Khaled Barakat, who is the husband of Charlotte Cates, who here in is news here in Vancouver for her house being raided by a SWAT team to arrest the 60-something-year-old human rights worker, or no, maybe a bit younger, don't quote me on that age. What news do you have about what happened in Vancouver recently with this attack on Samidun, and why is Samidun such a threat?
Yes, so there's, I don't know the details of what happened in Vancouver, but clearly it comes after this international campaign by the Zionists against Samedun. And the reason Samedun is a target, a frontline target for the Zionists, is because it has done amazing work educating about the Palestinian prisoners' plight. It's called the Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Group, and it has for more than two decades been active in Europe and North America and educated thousands upon thousands of people about the plight of the Palestinian prisoners. And the other thing is that because it's able to work on such a huge scale across Europe and North America, it is becoming a threat to the Zionists because it was mobilizing in Europe, for instance, created the same people with Samedun, created, kind of a congress for Palestinians in the diaspora in Europe, and they were trying to organize the political power of the Palestinian Arab and Muslim communities in the diaspora. And those are, threats to the hegemony of the Zionists in the political system in the West. So ultimately, their success is why they are targeted. And the accusations that they are somehow terrorists is outrageous. And as we see, Samedun and Charlotte Cates are fighting this in court. And if there's any justice really in the system, they would win in court. But I doubt the system in Canada or the U.S. will do them justice. We saw what's happening to that Palestinian Canadian in Newfoundland that was suing Harper for the killing of family members of his in Gaza in 2008 and 2009 for the support of the Harper government. How that man was thrown into a mental institution without their consent, accused of being crazy for even trying to bring justice for his family or accusing the Canadian government of supporting war crimes. Luckily, that guy is out of the mental institution and is now suing the government for. So you see the whole system in Canada, from the mental health system to the police, to the attorney general, to the courts, all of them in Newfoundland collaborated together to destroy the life of a Palestinian Canadian for daring to take the former Prime Minister of Canada to court about the war crimes committed in 2008-2009 by the Zionist colony. And now we're going to see the same happen not only to Charlotte Cates, not only to Samedun, but all Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim Canadians and those who support Palestinian liberation will be target to mass repression. People should be ready for this to come. There may be internment camps on the horizon for everybody. And those who are Canadian citizens that want to make sure that doesn't happen to them need to organize very fast and with objectives that are beyond just these demonstrations in the streets that will not save off the rounding up of people and throwing them in internment camps.
Well, the Vancouver police had targeted Charlotte Cates only, not her husband, Khaled Barakat, for violations, they allege, of Section 319, public incitement and willful promotion of hatred, they say. The Vancouver police media person says, quote, "We have responsibility to ensure public comments don't promote or incite hatred, encourage violence, or make people feel unsafe." That doesn't count on both sides of the coin, clearly. And the B'nai B'rith organization is running a media campaign and lobbying campaign in government to have Khaled Barakat and his wife deported from Canada, they say, for their activities. Laith, we're fast out of time. How do people get a hold of you, especially now? How can they find the interview you did with Khaled Barakat, seeing as YouTube won't let you air it on their platform? How do they help?
Yes, We are on Rumble, we're on Odyssey, we're on Brighteon, we're on X, and all of those platforms. Plus, we're on Patreon and Substack, and you can find the episode on all of those platforms. All the links to our socials